Welcome to Blue Line, the podcast hosted by Blue Line, Canada's only independent national magazine for law enforcement. You've tuned in to hear compelling conversations on hot topics and trends with law enforcement professionals and personalities from across Canada.
And now, a message from our sponsor, Wilfrid Laurier University. With Laurier's 100% online degree programs, you can earn your undergraduate or graduate degree from a top-ranked university with an academic and institutional tradition that is over 100 years old. Choose from a Bachelor of Arts in Policing, a Bachelor of Arts in Criminology and Policing, Master of Public Safety, and 5 graduate diplomas in the areas of Emergency Management, National Security, Countering Crime, Border Strategies, and GIS and Data Analytics. Transfer credits apply for basic constable training towards a BA in policing. For more information, visit www.laurierpublicsafety.ca. Hello, Blue Line, the podcast subscribers. We hope you're doing well, and welcome back to another episode of Blue Line, the podcast. I'm Brittany Schroeder, editor of Blue Line Magazine. Today, we are joined by retired Sergeant Lonnie Blackett. We will be chatting about his career, the changes he noticed throughout his time as an officer, and the importance of continuing education and training within the law enforcement profession. Welcome, and thank you for joining me today.
Good day. Thank you very much, Brittany, for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you today. You have over 30 years of experience in the industry, and I think you're going to share some awesome insight into everything that kind of went on throughout your career. So, like, jumping right in, can you tell me what inspired you to become a police officer?
People have asked me this question many, many times before, and even my children, since I was about 8 years old, and I mean that, since I was about 8 years old, that's all I wanted to do. Why? I don't know. I know myself, I'm a bit of a people person. I like talking to people. I like relating to the public. And since I was 8 years old, this was my prime goal, either going into policing, if that didn't work, going into the military. I believe I have it in me, but policing is all I wanted to do. I did it. I know I did it well. I'm quite happy when I left the job after 33 years, and I knew it was time to go. But I enjoyed every day. I never had a bad day out there. Yeah, it might have been some supervisors or higher ups who try to ruin your day sometime, and this happens in every police force. But I enjoyed it. I laughed a lot, and I enjoyed it. And I do believe I left quite a legacy with my police department, Peel Regional Police.
That's so awesome. And like I said, I'd love to hear about your career from recruitment all the way up to retiring as a sergeant. You also shared with me that you were the first Black police officer in Brampton. Can you tell me about that experience?
Yes, that's correct. When I joined Peel in the year 1974, that was the year that Peel Regional Police was formed. There was an amalgamation of 5 small police forces. And excuse me, I still tend to use the term force, police force, now it's police service. I still believe that the police are a force to be reckoned with. Society may think differently, but we'll try and alternate between police force and police service. When I started, it was 1974. That's the first year the Peel Regional Police Service was formed. The opportunity came up. I wanted to do it. And I thought I would toss my head in the ring, so to speak. And I was hired. And even before I started, my recruiting officer called me up to give me the date, and then I sort of backtracked, and I told him, I don't think I want to come in. I'm not too sure what's happening. And he called me to the office, sat me down, and we had a serious talk. He said, we wanted you. You did very well on the scores, and this place is growing, et cetera, what the salaries were. And I started off there. It was good. When I started off, I was assigned to the Brampton Division, 21 Division, located next to the Bramley City Center. Now, keep in mind, in those days, prior to amalgamation, there was the city of Brampton, and then there was Jingakusi Township, which was basically the Bramley Police. They had a small force of about 45 officers. So when I was posted there, basically we did Bramley and the whole city of Brampton and up into the township areas, which was rural. Farms, horse ranches and so on. And then City of Brampton took over the entire place. So then we had the whole City of Brampton. When I started policing, the 21 Division, there were 64,000 total population. Today, you find the City of Brampton is close to 700,000 people. It is quite a large area.
Wow.
And when I started at the 21 Division, we had approximately 150 officers working out of that division. Today, you find that they're running close to 400 officers working out of that division. The building has been redone and so on. It was a different world then. It was a different world then, not just for me, but for policing in general. Keep in mind the demographics at that time was basically all white Anglo-Saxon Protestant that moved out here. A lot of them were recent immigrants from the United Kingdom. Being the only black out in the community, it was challenging for me, but I enjoyed it. On my police force at the time, being the first black in the station, a lot of the guys I worked with never had any black friends or went to school with any black people. I was accepted by, I would say, 95% of the guys, and I mean fully accepted. There was always a few who had their problems and their hang-ups, but that never bothered me. The officer who was assigned to me as my training officer, I still speak very, very well about this individual. He's passed away, but he took me under his wings just as though I were his brother. And he taught me the job. Showed me right things. He showed me if I did things wrong, how to correct him. And we developed quite a bond that even in his last days before he passed away, I was able to visit him and so on. And I thanked him. It was a bit of a trial and error stuff, working up, in the North End, as we called it, because Peel region is quite a large region geographically. But I learned a lot. And I quickly stood out in many ways. Positively and some negatively. I did not have much of a negative response from the community. There were a lot of stares, of course, people, who the heck, we got a black guy in Brampton now. But you quickly came to know who the good people were and who the offenders were, and they were treated accordingly. And sometimes you were respected by some of the offenders because of the ways you treated them. I think one of the things I always said to people when I was making an arrest or having to deal with them in a very stern manner was, it's nothing personal. I'm just doing the job. I've got nothing against you. And I think this went a long way into breaking the ice. I will tell you a bit of a story here that I don't know if anyone else, being a minority officer, has experienced it. Now, keep in those days, we wore the full Sam Brown uniform. You wore your tunic. You know, you could hardly lift your arms up because the things were so tight on you, and you wore a cross strap. We wore the cross draw holster. Those things were not safe at all. It was just a button on the thing, and sometimes you're wrestling with someone, and oops, there's your revolver on the ground. Fortunately, no one was attacked by anybody who picked up that revolver. But I showed up at a domestic call on one of the hotels here in Brampton, and went to the door. The complainant was a female, knocked on the door, and she opened the door. Now, keep in mind, I'm in my full uniform. And those days, we were semi-military more then than now. You had to be shining your leather, your boots, and everything. She opened the door and looked at me, and you could see there was shock in her face. And she asked me point blank, "Are you a police officer?" And to which I replied, "Yes. Can I see some identification?" Which I did. I produced my wallet, which contained my warrant card and badge. And even then, she was quite hesitant to let me into the room. I went into the room, and she said straight up, she didn't know that there were black police officers in Canada. Some people, I would think, might seem to think that she was being racist in her attitude. No, she did not know. She came from a small town in Ontario, and she had never seen, or perhaps was not the person to keep up to date with the news and current events and so on.
Right.
And
right.
She never knew that. She never knew that there were Black police officers. I suppose I was a little bit taken aback by it. But once I realized this was after I conducted my investigation and carried on from there.
You spoke on it a little bit, but like, how did, like, did you go home that night going, oh, you know, like, how did you feel? Like,
it's something that stayed with me for a bit. I thought about it. The type of person I am, I suppose people have said I'm half comedian. So there was a lot of jokes made about it, guard room at the station and so on, telling the guys about it. But it's something that I'd never experienced before, professional life or so on. And you think about it, but then you realize, hey, there's probably going to be more people like that because I'm the first one up here. And as long as I keep my nose clean and I do my job to the best of my ability, there's a possibility more minorities will be hired, and pretty soon there'll be more minorities on the street. And if you look at it now compared to then to now, I look at my police force, Peel Region. As a matter of fact, the police services within the Greater Toronto Area will be Toronto, York Region, Halton Region, Peel. There are so many minorities within the organizations now, and I've always maintained that the police department must represent the population it serves. Now, out here in Peel, we're very, very diversified in terms of population. And we have people here now, not just the officers at the entry level, constable level, but we've got people who have made upward mobility into the mid-management and senior management roles. Personally, it's something that I enjoy seeing. I believe strongly that I contributed to that over the years by doing my job to high level of competence, and I'm happy to see that. And the country has changed, the province has changed. We're not going back to the 1950s or 1960s as much as some people would like to see it there. We're society and life, we don't regress, we progress. So we've got, I believe, a good police force there. We're not perfect, but we've got good people.
That's amazing. And after you were hired, do you recall like how long it was until another Black police officer was hired?
Yes, it was approximately 7 years. 7 years after that,
oh, wow.
Second Black officer was hired. And coincidentally, he was also stationed at my division, the 21 division in Branley, Brampton. He stayed with the department for about 6 years. And on his own, he decided he was going to leave and go back into private life, and he moved on. Following that, there were one or two who were hired, and went like that for quite a while, As a matter of fact, if I may say this, even though we were hired in those days, and I'm being quite blunt here, you were hired, but in those days, Blacks or minorities were not expected to make upward mobility. You were expected to stay at the constable rank, even though you did a good job, even though you were competent, even though you were respected. You received a lot of commendations. And then there was another officer who came on. We got promoted, not at the same time. It took me about, I guess, about 12 years before I got promoted. And for many, many years, there were just the two of us who were promoted to the rank of sergeants. And there was quite a lull in terms of minorities coming on. Females started to come onto the department. Females started to make up with mobility. But those of us who were visible, we never went anywhere until successive administrations changed and until the community spoke out. The community started to speak out. We've got so much diversity here. We're starting to see one or two people of different ethnicities and cultures coming in, but they're not moving anywhere. They're staying at the bottom rank. That, of course, caused the department to start to look at people seriously and to promote them, not based because of the color of their skin, but based strictly on merit. And this is what we've seen now, and this is where we are. And I don't believe we're going to go back to those days. We're hiring, I mean, part of my career was a recruiter, and we're hiring minorities, kids who were born here and who see policing as a viable alternative. See it as a career. And you can't tell these people we're not going to hire you. And if you hire you with all the qualifications you've got, you're not going anywhere. So in general, I believe things are moving in the right direction.
That's awesome. And I'm really glad that that's what happened. Like the community started to speak out, and the force or the service recognized that the community was calling for something to change, and they actually made that change. Like that's something great to hear.
Yes.
And you mentioned that it took about 12 years before you got your first bump up from constable. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you didn't go straight to sergeant. What were your steps in between?
Yes, some of the departments had the corporal ranks, and those ranks were done away with. So you went from constable, first class constable, if you were promoted, to either sergeant or detective. Full detective is also a rank. In plainclothes, you're detective. If you went back into uniform, you're sergeant. And that's how most of the police organizations, I think the exception maybe the RCMP, they still have the corporal rank. Just about any other police departments that I'm familiar with. From constable to sergeant and staff sergeant and letter.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And this is just a side note, but you mentioned earlier that like since you were the first Black police officer, like you've kind of like led that way to more being hired on the service, and now Peel's police chief is Chief Duryapa, and you know he's a Black man, and just like I mean that started with you. That's amazing.
I would like to think so. And I had never met this chief, mm-hmm. But I went to his swearing in when he became chief of PLI, because I wanted to meet him and I wanted to talk to him and I wanted to tell him that I was proud to finally see someone who was a minority making it onto the job. We spoke for a bit. We do keep in touch. I believe he has done quite a bit positively for this organization. He's brought this organization right up. He's a leader. He looks at the future. And I'm glad to see him as the chief of police out here. Some people may take issue with me. Having grown up, so to speak, within the department and served under five police chiefs and administrations, I believe this administration is leading the way, and I wish him well.
That's so awesome. And you kind of touched on this already. You talked about the differences in the uniform that you guys used to wear. Just other kinds of changes that you saw throughout your 33-year career, from the equipment you use to other changes in the uniform, different ways of training. Like, what did you notice change throughout your career?
There's quite a bit of change. We're talking over 33 years when I was on the job, quite a bit of change, and things are still changing. The uniforms we wore at the time, as I said, were more semi-military, but that's what society expected at the time. If you look at the people, when I came on the job, people who were the NCOs, non-commissioned officers, the sergeants, the staff sergeants, even some of the inspectors, most of these people came from the military. They were ex-military. And it transcended into policing that this is how you do things. For example, basically, we have before the officers are sent out on the street, the uniform officers, we refer to as parade, or basically it's a roll call. And at my time when I started, this was, you stood at attention. You showed all of your equipment. The sergeant or the staff sergeant would come around and he would be in his full uniform and he'd inspect you from head to toe. He'd look at your uniform. He'd look at the peak of your hat, if there was any dust on it. He'd look at your shirts, if they weren't properly ironed. And he would tell you, change that shirt before you go out in the street. And if you come back in the next night with something looking like it, you're in trouble. Now, the parades or the roll calls, it's a sit-down affair. People just pull up, sit down. It's the sergeant get up front and give them their assignments and certain things to look for, and et cetera. And that discipline, I suppose, for someone like myself who started into it, it's missing to a certain point. Your sergeant in those days was God. you dare not disobey his, and I say his because in those days there were no female sergeants, maybe one someplace in the organization. You didn't go around him and walk straight into the staff sergeant's office. You had to go through your sergeant. Even at the police college when we were there, everything again was in a military file. You had to make up your beds, and sometimes they'd throw an inspection on you, and your beds had to be made according to the regulations stipulated by the college. And if they weren't, they'd tear them up, and you would have to make them again. You were evaluated on these things as a rookie.
Wow.
Yes, society has changed. I know that. We've got to keep up with it. And I've heard some people going off track here, even some school teachers talking about the kids they have. The kids just don't respect them. But policing is something that is going to change, has to change. And as much as perhaps I still adhere to some of the old regulation and so that we had, I think I'm realistic to know that time has to go on. At times, those days, you never spoke back to your sergeant. Now it's, you know, from what I understand, people call the sergeants or just speak back to them or sort of threaten them, they're going to report them. That type of thing wouldn't happen in my day. It would be, well, let's fill in the blanks there. Uniforms changed from more to more of a working uniform, where you're able to get out and we started carrying the open holsters, and then we went to the semi-automatics now that we have. Some of the older officers would remember what I'm going to say here, because the younger officers who are in now seem to think this is the way things were. They joined the job. They had the semi-automatic sidearms. We didn't have those. We had to march on Queen's Park to get those things back in the late 80s, perhaps. It was organized by the Metro Toronto Police Association. Those days we call them Metro, now referred to as Toronto Police, to get the proper firearms. And there were activists within the community who were dead set against us carrying semi-automatic weapons. Oh. Meanwhile, the criminals in the street were carrying them and carrying bigger and better weapons than we had. We had the six-shot revolvers. Good weapon, but they were not weapons that could keep up to the weapons that the people in the streets were carrying.
Right.
And it was the first time I saw a police demonstration in full uniform. There were police forces from across the Greater Toronto area, and I believe Ottawa sent a couple of guys. And there were several hundred of us downtown in Toronto. We mustered there and marched onto Queen's Park. It was it wasn't a loud, boisterous march. It was orderly. But we were demanding at that time that we be given the firearms. And eventually we got them. This is something that I don't believe too many officers are aware of this. They don't know this. It's not something that's written up in police magazines, but it did happen. I don't remember the exact year, but it was probably in the late 80s. And I could tell you that there were community activists who were dead set because in their minds, we wanted these things to quote unquote shoot more people.
Right. Which of course is completely wrong.
Completely wrong. Completely wrong. I don't know of any police officer who wakes up in the morning, goes to work and says, well, today I'm going to shoot somebody.
Right.
You are given that firearm to protect yourself and to protect others. Mm-hmm. Having said that, training has to keep up to date, especially when it comes to training with firearms. This has to change. It has to go on.
Yeah.
In my day when we started, we used to be showing pop-up videos. Shoot, don't shoot. It would show something, an individual is carrying a knife, shoot, don't shoot. You were taught to shoot. He had the knife in his hand. He was not advancing. He wasn't yelling and screaming at you. He had a knife. Shoot. There was no room, at least at that time, for dialogue between yourself and this individual.
Right.
Sadly, we've seen in the past, some people have lost their lives to this. It's how the officers were trained. You can't blame the officer for it. I remember a situation with myself. I was only on the job for about 3 years. And again, we're still carrying those cross-draw holsters. responded to what was a domestic call. When I got to the scene, it was on a court. And someone just shouted, because there were tons of people out in the street, and someone just shouted, "Look out, he's got a knife." And I turned around, and behind me, there was this fella, I believe he was around 19 at the time, and he had a knife, and it was a fairly large knife. And before I could get the information from the public who called, he had a knife. I did what I had to do. I drew my firearm. And there was a standoff. The only reason why I did not shoot, even though my training said, with a knife, shoot, was he started to back away from me. I advanced. He backed away some more. I kept advancing. He backed away. He never came towards myself. Now, I knew backup was coming. Unfortunately, the backup unit that showed up was a backup unit, a two-man unit from the tactical squad, unmarked car. They came around, and to hear one of the officers say subsequently, he says, "All I saw was that barrel of that gun looking at this kid." The driver of the car had the wherewithal, the common sense, to put that bumper right in the back of the guy's knees, and he knocked him right over the hood. The knife went flying. We grabbed him.
Wow.
I've thought about that many, many times, even now. Had I shot that individual, there's no doubt in my mind, based on training, I would have been cleared. I would have had to live with that. I went back to the division. Of course, I got to do my report. Mm-hmm. Went back to the division, filled in the staff sergeant as to what happened. And when I sat down to do my report, I couldn't do it. My entire body started shaking.
Oh.
My body started shaking. And honestly, if it was available, I think I would have had a good drink or three. But I had to walk away and just walk around and for quite a bit before I could sit down and compose myself.
Yeah.
Thinking of what if, what could have happened? What could have happened? And the thing is, that would have messed me up. I'm sure it would have. I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah.
Occasionally. And people talk about, you know, the officers couldn't do this or couldn't do it. Look, let me tell you something. As a former recruiter, our standards in Peel were always high. We had some of the highest standards before some of the other police departments who were strictly going with grade 12. We took people with a college, university, or a combination of. Linguistic skills played a big role because the population out in Peel, diversity was growing. I know for a fact that when we hire someone, because we tested these people psychologically also, they've checked off all the boxes. They've met the standards. Put them out in the street for 5 or 8 or 10 years and some of the things that they experience and see will blow their minds. It is only now we're starting to see that police forces, police services are paying attention to what is now known as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. In my days, I've seen it, I've heard it. Your superiors in rank will tell you to suck it up. Get back out and run and do the job. Who the hell do you think you are, some wimp? You would be made fun of. You'd be ostracized. Your career is in tatters. And what did this cause? A lot of guys turn to the bottle. Easiest thing to get is alcohol. And we had some champion alcoholics in the department. I mean, these guys had papers in drinking, you know. And people would talk about them and it would affect their careers. They weren't drinking because they loved it. They were drinking to deaden the pain because you couldn't talk to anyone. A lot of marriages, a lot of relationships went down the hill. A lot of officers became promiscuous as a way to conquer their fears. Now we're seeing most police forces have got wellness bureaus within, or they are making help available quickly to officers who experience things. Just seeing car crashes where bodies are mutilated. We're seeing teenagers committing suicide. And you walk into that residence or just going into the middle of the night, knocking on the doors and waking someone up, a family. And they come to the door at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. They know you're not there to play tiddlywinks. What happened? Where's my husband? And to see that family be destroyed right there and then it affects you. Now, again, to repeat myself, officers are gradually getting the help they need. So when people say, you know, you got this bad cop and that bad cop, yeah, you've got some cops out there that have done some atrocious things. I don't stand behind them. And there were some people who should not have been hired by police departments, but eventually they get weeded out. I don't know of any police officer or any police department who wants to have a bad apple on their force. The guys that you work with, once they realize you're that type, they'll turn against you. They'll turn you in. They don't want to have that because of the negative publicity that it generates. People see us out there. People depend on us.
Yeah.
You remove the police officer from society, Brittany. What have we got? What have we got? We could get by without a lot of things day to day in society. No garbage pickup, no mail. Get the police officers off the street. And you will see chaos. If I could continue along this vein, I grew up in the city of Montreal. I remember in 1969, I was just a young guy there. I had my first apartment. And in the summer of 1969, there was the first police strike in this country. Again, this is something that young officers are not aware of. It's not something that you see in police magazines. First police strike when the city of Montreal police went on strike for wages. And they're more of a militaristic group in the province of Quebec, their police forces, than we are here. For 14 hours, there were no police officers in the street. And I finished working and I went home, stayed in my apartment because downtown Montreal was burning. There was looting. Women were not safe to walk on the streets because women were fair game riding in the subway system, the metro. There were always idiots on there who were doing all sorts of things and laughing about it because there was no police officers coming. It was the Quebec government sent in the Quebec Provincial Police, the Sûreté Québec, the SQ, to help out. And one of their officers were shot and killed. That murder of that police officer has not been solved to this day.
Oh my God.
To this day. We're talking 50 years later.
Wow.
Eventually, cooler heads prevailed. The officers went back to their jobs. But it was chaos. I saw it. I lived through it. And I know the last 2 years, because of a lot of situations that happened in the United States, and please don't try to compare police here with the police in the United States. We're more professional, better trained. Our salaries are better. Policing here in Canada is a profession. It's not a job. It's a profession. We could get into this, and there's lots of ways how things are done differently down there. But police officers here, we need the support of the community. We're not against anybody. And any police officer, individually or collectively, who has got an attitude against certain people in the community, he's going to be weeded out very quickly. He'll be found. Keep in mind, we have a code of conduct and discipline internally, which really, you don't want to be subject to that type of stuff.
Right.
You're demoted. You're losing money, a lot of money. You got a wife, a mortgage, kids. And again, you're ostracized. Both of these guys individually, they leave, they move on to something else.
Like you said, a lot of new, younger officers, they probably have no idea about most of this stuff. And that's just, I am learning so much. But I wanted to go back and talk about that situation you had with the man who had the knife and you didn't shoot.
Yes.
But like your training told you to. Do you think like that would kind of relate to nowadays when they're talking about de-escalation training and stuff like that, like trying to talk the subject down and like try to get him to put the knife down? Is that kind of go in hand?
There has to be de-escalation training. Now, understand one thing, training takes money.
Yeah.
Depending on the type of course, depending on the length of course, officers are taken off the street and being trained either within their department or sent elsewhere to be trained. So that means you've got less manpower out there. which means, of course, you got to make up for it. You got to schedule guys, perhaps, who are from different platoons who are off duty or fill in. Again, that takes money. During the course of my career, I would say a good 10 to 12 years before I retired, I was trained as a hostage negotiator. That is a tremendous course for officers to be sent on. It teaches you how to de-escalate, teaches you how to talk to people. Having said that, we're not going to be able to talk everyone down. We used to talk about the three T's, time, talk, and tear gas. And talk to this guy. It may take hours. And go into the next day. And you, as much as possible, if you have the officers, you can't just use one hostage negotiator because he starts getting burned out. You've got to have two or three. And you've got to get away from that desk if it's you're doing it, or if you seem relaxed, get your mindset again, come on back in. As long as you've got this individual talking to you, there is hope. Even if he calls you every name in the book, gives you the history of your genealogy, that's fine. Let him talk.
Right.
The hard part is if this individual has suddenly stopped talking, then we got a problem. Right. What is happening?
Yeah.
Has he killed himself? Has he killed a hostage? Has he passed out from being intoxicated or on drugs? This is where you have to use your tactical unit to make an entry.
Right.
I wish, and again, it's a money thing. I wish that just about every second or third officer, perhaps all out there, should get some form of hostage negotiation training. Again, perhaps I'm barking up the wrong tree here again, but it takes time to get people to be trained. I always used to tell the young officers, because I was a training officer, I worked in recruiting and training also. And sometimes you'd ask them, what's the biggest weapon you have with you? And invariably, they're young, they're green, they'd say, oh, sidearm. No. The biggest weapon you carry out there is your mouth.
That's,
you know, to speak to people.
Yeah.
You know, to speak to people, show respect. If you don't show respect, you're not going to get respect.
Yeah.
Then the situation goes up. Instead of starting from the bottom, you started from the top. Where do you go when you're at the top now? Into your firearm. Look, let's take for example. I mean, look at the United States and some of it, especially in the South. Officer walks up to the car, first thing he's got his gun, his hand is on his gun, either on the weapon or he's got it out. Why? Well, where does he go from there? Put it back in and say, okay, instead of walking up, how are you, sir? May I see your driver's license? First thing, yeah, I understand. Everybody just about carries a weapon, though. It's in their constitution.
Yeah.
But you just walk up, car, you pull someone over, and you got your firearm out. Where are you going from there? You can't back down. You got to use it. And this is the difference between us here and those of the United States. And I'm opening up myself to a lot of debate. Bring it on. We are better trained here as police officers in this country. Yes, don't get me wrong. There are times, if it's a high-risk takedown, we've got to have our weapons out. Happens.
Yep.
Any officer out there who's been on for a bit has made arrests at gunpoint. And as I've always told the young fellas, if you're going to draw that weapon, be prepared to use it. Don't bluff.
Yeah.
If you think you're going to bluff this idiot, he's going to take that weapon, and he's going to use it on you. But big thing is the experience, and experience is not only something that you personally experience, there's imagined experience. Read up on these things. You got a quiet moment, sit and think, what if all of a sudden I'm driving by this apartment building, there's some guy up there with a weapon, what do you do? Replay that in your mind. You pull up to your car and there's a guy pointing a gun at you. Replay it in your mind. So when it does happen, you know how to respond. Don't try and take things on all by yourself, while I'm the young copper who's likely to win the battle against crime. That's not going to happen. We work as a team. And in the larger police forces, again, in the greater Toronto area, because we've got so many officers and so forth, backup is not far away most of the time. You going to work in the morning? I always say to the young fellows, before you go out in the street, regardless of your faith, regardless of your belief, say a silent prayer. You intend to go home, whether you're single or to your family, your parents. You know, you all got parents, so we got wives, your kids. They need you. Newspapers like to, blow things out of proportion at times before they get the full facts. I'm not saying we are perfect as police. Police are not perfect. We'll make mistakes. Air is human.
You're human, exactly.
I have traveled around this world a bit. When I retired, I worked with a couple of airlines as corporate security and onboard security. And I'm telling you, not just in that facet, but we travel around every year on vacation. The best policing in the world, and I'm saying this with pride, the best policing in the world, the policing we have here in Canada. Go to some other countries and see what you've got. See what you've got.
What we have in Canada is just, I'm happy that I live here, for sure.
Well, I think also, too, because of the fact that, we don't have in our constitution that we have a right to bear arms. Yes, there are guns out in the street, and a lot of guns. Unfortunately, they're in the hands of the criminals. There's a lot of guns out there. The average person may have weapons, rifles, shotguns for hunting. The odd time, and I mean the odd time, maybe a marital breakup or something, and one person uses a weapon against each other, but that's the odd time. You look at the amount of school shootings and so on in the United States. Are you or some of the young officers who will be looking at this podcast down the road, you're aware that we had the first school shooting here occurred in Brampton in 1975?
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Brampton Centennial Secondary School. This was less than a year after I came on the job.
Wow.
We did not have a tactical unit then. It was still starting and growing. There was an officer who served with me. He's also retired now. He was a student at that school, and he missed getting shot by the offender, who was also a student from that school.
Oh, my God.
He went on to become a police officer. And as I said, he's now retired. I think there were three people, one teacher, and the individual or the perpetrator eventually turned the weapon on himself. But you don't hear about that.
Yeah,
that's something that from a historical point of view in terms of policing, I don't know of any young officer who knows about that here. We've had it here in Canada. And we're fortunate that we don't have access to firearms, or we probably have more of these things, or disgruntled employees, as we see in the United States, as we say, going postal.
Mm-hmm. Well, those were all of my questions. Do you have anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap up?
I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to do this podcast. I mean, there's a lot more things that should come out. Again, from somewhat my experience, who's seen it from the transition from when we first started out here in Peel. And the same with Toronto Police. I mean, if you were to talk to someone who's retired from the Toronto Police Force or from York or from Niagara, we've had some pretty, pardon the expression, badass dudes in society. We were able to get them. We were able to bring them to justice. It seems now that since we've had the Charter of Rights come in, and Charter of Rights is good. We need it for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people seem to try to skate under this type of thing or use it for everything. We tend at times to pick up on everything that happens in the United States. And we think to import it here and be the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We're a different country. We're a different country. We've got to be the way we always were. This is the best country in the world. People who are not born in Canada, I don't think they understand that this is the best country in the world.
Yeah.
And we need good policing. Policing has got to be professional. Job police officers, as I said, when they come on the job, they've got what you're looking for. But education has to improve within policing, not just what you've got when you enter, but you've got to keep up to date, keep current. Statutes change, laws change. You got to keep up to date with those. Or you're writing up someone on an old law that doesn't apply today, and he walks into court and is tossed out. Officers have got to improve their personal education. Here in Peel, we're dealing with more of a middle class to upper middle class, people who are aware. You've got teenagers who can tell you the law just as much as you know it, and they will question you and challenge you.
Yeah.
Keep up to date. Keep learning. Go back to school. You can spend time. We got a lot of time off as police officers. One night a week, whether you do it online or you attend in person. I did it. Go to one of the colleges, universities, keep up to date. The world is changing. Computer skills are changing. The cyber world is something that we've got to be careful of. Slowly, police departments are getting investigators there, but there's a lot we don't know about computer crime. We've got to keep up to date with that. So I would say to the young police officers, do your job, be careful. Put aside the gung-ho attitude. Respect people.
Yeah.
The way you talk to people will decide how you're going to handle that situation. Listen to the experience from your older officers, senior guys. Unfortunately, a lot of the guys are retiring, and you've got young guys with 3 years on the job who are out there training officers. And these young training officers haven't seen a naked angry man yet. But they're training, and that's one of the things. People, the pension is good in officers as soon as they get about 30 years out the door.
Yeah.
So we're not perfect. Policing is not perfect. Police officers are not perfect. We try. We do our best. All we ask is the community support us, try to understand us. Listen to the facts before you start making your judgment. I've always said from the time I started, finally, I was not going to die on this job. And I didn't. I left the job with my head screwed on right. I still laugh and have fun. I still associate with a lot of police officers. As a matter of fact, over the last year, our Chief Nish had me in on two occasions to talk to recruit classes on systemic racism. And it went over well. I know it went over well.
Awesome.
And I would like to see sometimes police forces using those officers who are interested. A lot of officers, once they quit, they want nothing to do with it. There's one or two of us who are still interested.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching and talking to the brand new officers coming in there. We're not there to tell people stories, as we say, war stories, what we did, what we didn't do. If you want that, we could get that too. But we're talking about what do basic common sense things,
mm-hmm.
how to approach a vehicle, how to do this, how to do that. I think this is where a lot of police forces are missing out on using some of your retirees who are interested in coming back.
Yeah.
And talking to your people. It's nothing like experience.
Well, Lonnie, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your experiences from your over three decades in the law enforcement industry. I learned so much, and I really hope that everyone who listens to our podcast as well learns from your experiences. Hopefully those young cops are listening in. To our audience, we hope that you enjoyed this episode of Blue Line, the podcast. Be sure to check us out on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can stay up to date on all of your Canadian policing news at blueline.ca. Thank you to everyone who listened, and thank you, Lonnie.
Thank you.
With Laurier's 100% online degree programs, you can earn your undergraduate or graduate degree from a top-ranked university with an academic and institutional tradition that is over 100 years old. Choose from a Bachelor of Arts in Policing, Bachelor of Arts in Criminology and Policing, Master of Public Safety, and 5 graduate diplomas in the areas of Emergency Management, National Security, Countering Crime, Border Strategies, and GIS and Data Analytics. Transfer credits apply for basic constable training towards a BA in policing. For more information, visit www.laurierpublicsafety.ca.
Thank you for joining Blue Line, the podcast hosted by Blue Line. Canada's only independent national magazine for law enforcement.